War Affiliates. ETFs on silver have on the silver pricing? I've heard that the shorts are coming in on and due on Monday, the March 3rd. What type of reaction is that going to cause the price of silver?
All right, fine. Now, you're talking about the shorts or you're talking about the ETF?
Well, I'm you know what? I'm not so sure. I might need some explanation on both. I'm a little confused.
All right, Melody, you heard the question, and Mike wants to know about the ETF, what impact it has. What impact does it have when the shorts come due? And Mike is saying that the shorts are going to be coming due on Monday. In other words, people have been selling silver that they don't hold. And, of course, the old adage is, he who sells what isn't his has to give it back or go to prison. And so they've been manipulating the silver price for a long time by, of course, selling short so they can force the price down. But suddenly, of course, they're going to have to meet silver prices is almost $20. Now it's gone up, certainly almost several dollars an ounce in the last week or two. And, of course, they're facing real problems. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree on this electronic trading. We have seen some volume records on silver and palladium futures trading and in the electronic area. And as far as you're right, if the shorts come due, they will have to buy the silver in order to supply the metal. So we could see, that day could be, when they come due, could be a very interesting day for silver. The ETFs,
Explain to you, because explain to our listeners what an ETF is, because many may not be acquainted with that term.
Well, that's electronic trading. And you can buy gold or silver and other items for I guess you buy a small percentage of the metal in there, and supposedly they buy it and they hold it, but there really is no, to my knowledge, any true accounting for what they actually physically hold. So there could be distortions in that.
And sounds like the old warehousemen.
Well, that's really exactly what it is. Yep. Supposedly, how do you store silver? It's very hard to store.
Yes.
So what you do is you buy the exchange-traded fund, and they supposedly hold the silver for you. So you buy 1,000 ounces of silver, and then if silver goes up, why, of course, your account goes up. If silver goes down, your account goes down. What this really does, I think, as far as the market is concerned, is certainly it's taking large amounts of silver that is being bought on the commodity market and driving the price up. And as people are buying silver through the exchange-traded fund, it's raising the price of silver, just as people buying gold on the exchange-traded fund is forcing the price of gold up. Now, it may well be that down the line, the Federal Reserve System is going to have something to stabilize the value of their money. It's even conceivable they might seize the money of the gold and silver and these exchange-traded funds to use them as the foundation for the new monetary system they're going to come up with. What are your thoughts on that, Melody?
I agree. I believe these ETFs were designed for a purpose. And I believe the purpose was to support future changes in the monetary system. Now, whether they use them to manipulate the prices, to put pressure on them and to raise them, but I do believe they were created for those for that purpose.
So you think that the ETF is being used to add a hyperinflationary effect on each silver to drive the price up so that people can't take as much possession of them, robbing them further of their purchasing power of the dollar?
No, I don't think it's a hyperinflationary pressure on it. Because if you own silver, that's good. So, but I think they were designed, it is a trading tool. People make money in there, but I believe that they were, and it's my personal opinion, that they were designed for something a little more than just trading of commodities.
And I think that these people are about 15 steps ahead of you and I, Mike. They realize that the whole monetary system is going to collapse. Where are they going to get the massive amounts of gold that they need to form a new monetary system? Well, if they were to tell the American people to turn into gold, I don't think most of them would do it. But there's a lot of money in those exchange-traded funds. You're talking about hundreds of tons of gold and comparable amounts of silver there. And it would be very nice, of course, for the government to say, well, we need this. It's an emergency situation. This is going to be the basis of our new currency. And I think down the line, this is certainly one of the options that they have. Believe me, they've got it all planned out. They know what's going to happen. They just don't want the American people to find out until, of course, they've been impoverished. Okay?
Well, thank you for allowing me the time.
Okay, fine. Let's go then to Herman, who's calling from Carmel. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Good evening, and thanks for having Melody on again. I listen often, and I'm really helped by the facts that you give out. Sometimes, however, the realization of the state of the world brings upon a listener almost a state of fear, and I would like to just raise the question that as far as people not forgetting to give to others, even in hard times. Now, I had learned the practice of tithing many years ago, and I don't state that because it's anything great that I do, but I have learned that it does pay dividends. And so whatever position you're in, whether you're going up the economic ladder or down the economic ladder, please don't forget to give a certain percentage to your fellow man. I'd just like to get your comment on that, because I think there's a spiritual component that, you know, you could have your bank account full of money and drive down the road and be killed in an accident. And I know from personal experience that sometimes there is divine protection provided. I'd just like your comments on that.
Melody, what would you say to Herman?
Absolutely. We do have to give back, and we do have to help our fellow beings. And being prepared is one way in which we can also do that, because as individuals are prepared to the best of our ability, that allows us to help other people also. And so I think that is part of our position for those who know what's going on. There's a reason why there's a handful of us that see what's going on. I don't know why. I don't know, you know. There's a reason we see it, and I believe it's where we are spiritually. And so we are here for a reason. I am here for a reason. I'm to be here. I was placed here. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I think each and every one, no matter how little or how great they can do it, by being prepared and helping our fellow being is going to be very important. There's many ways in which you can give and many ways in which we can help people. And that is something that we can't forget, and we really do need to focus.
And, of course, someone once said, our life on here on earth will soon be passed. Mm-hmm. It's only what we do for Christ that will last, and I believe that's really very true.
Yes.
And, you know, I'll share with our listening audience what we do, and that is that my wife, of course, who manages the money, every month takes a certain amount of our income and puts it into an account. In other words, I never see it. It's not there. And it's considerably over the 10% tithe. God has blessed us very well, and so the money goes into that tithe account, and it is portioned out during the course of the year, and it doesn't cost us anything at all because the money's already been taken out, and then at the end of the year, it's all dispersed to needy ministries, people we think are doing a good job and doing the Lord's work. And I'll tell you, this makes it a lot easier than every month having to worry, how much are you going to give this month? Things are tight and we're having real problems. If you put the money automatically into a separate account, that's a tithe account, and you know it's there, or you can spend it with impunity, you don't even worry about it. It's the Lord's money, it's not ours. Yes. Does that answer at all, Herman?
Yes, and I heard a saying years ago that says you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead.
And of course, the other thing is you never saw a hearse pulling a U-Haul trailer to the funeral yard, to the funeral. So, you know, certainly, as you say, you can't take it with you. God bless, Herman. Thanks very much.
Thank
for
you.
Calling. And
bye-bye.
I think that's
thank
important.
You, Herman.
And our telephone bye-bye. Number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, it's always a delight to hear your voice. As I said before, it really stirs my soul, and I want to thank Melody for what she said about all of us being here by divine providence and guidance and counsel. And one of the themes that is always, of course, recurring is getting oneself out of immediate debt obligations. And I want to bring into focus the lawfully valid, legally binding solution that is presented to do that very thing for Christian believers in Bob Plimpton's You Were Born Free, Now You Can Live Free. Everyone in the audience can go to the website bobplimpton.com, click on the blue bar, and that accesses the 40-page, 20-year treatise that explains all of these presumed valid debt obligations. But as the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, Section 4 says, they kind of give you a secret view into their clandestine operation. It says, the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned. Why is that?
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. And of course, I knew Bob very well. Did he pass away?
Pardon me?
Did Bob Plimpton pass away?
No. In fact, I heard from him, yesterday.
Well, next time you talk to him, tell him to give me a call.
Dr. Stan, for Melody, I wanted to ask, there's a guy in the neighborhood who's a veteran, and all he's got is 50-cent silver coins. And he says there's a whole collection of silver 50-cent pieces, I guess, over a 33-year period. And I said, well, what about 63 when, you know, the year that JFK unfortunately was murdered? What about the year 57 when the first Corvette, as I remember here in Michigan, the first Corvette was introduced? Melody, is there any validity in investing in particular years of BU 50 cent pieces?
Melody, is there any advantage of investing in specific years in brilliant uncirculated or BU coins?
Personally, I don't think so. Because I view purchasing gold and silver as preserving your wealth. I believe if you're a hobbyist and you want to dabble in this type of thing, that's okay. But if you're truly looking to preserve your wealth and you're looking to get as much gold and silver as you can for your dollars, I believe there's other items that would suit those needs.
And I really think, Jack, it depends upon whether you're a pneumatist, and there's certain people who do, of course, collect certain rare dates and rare coins, but that is, of course, not what Melody does. That would be, of course, a specific coin dealer. But thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, find our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly we know that certain rare gold coins did very, very well back in the 1979 period, and they really went up far more than the value of gold. Melody, do you anticipate that's going to happen again this time or not?
Well, the rare coin market now is doing very well. We've just came out of the last year. There were some past couple of years. They've done extremely well, the rare coins. But it does take a special buyer. And I think there will always be a market for a rare coin. It's what happens is a lot lot of times a coin is sold as a rare coin and it isn't. And so it has its own select market. And what I always say, it's not coins that perform poorly. It's not understanding the coin. It's being sold to the wrong person and at the wrong price. And of course, if you're in a downward trend in coins, as we saw in the 90s, a lot of the rare coins, it was not a good time to buy them. So it's not coins. It's the people who sell the coins, but the coins get blamed.
Well, of course, there are all these very grading of coins, you know, uncirculated or almost uncirculated or brilliant uncirculated. And well, certainly you need to be some sort of an expert to be able to separate them, don't you?
Well, that's why I always recommend you buying the $20 gold pieces and the older coins or the tens to go into a mint state coin, because that gives you a guarantee that the coin is what it is. And all the extra fines and AUs and BUs, I call them opinion coins, because it's the opinion of the person that you're selling it to dictates the value. And people who buy these coins, they're not educated in their coins in order to say, well, that isn't, you know.
Melody, let's go ahead and get your telephone number out there and your website one more time.
That's 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Melody, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I'd like to encourage people to, I'd be more than happy to review their gold and silver portfolios. I'm not an advocate of trading, but sometimes you can adjust things in your portfolio, get a value of your portfolio, and we'll do that for you at no cost. And so you can either fax it to us, give me a call, and we can do that. We've got some great prices, and you have to be so very careful, because you're going to hear so many different things out there when it comes to the gold and silver markets. And one of my pet peeves is people will call me and they want to know what the bid and ask is on the coins and what we would pay to buy these coins back. And even though they're buyers, and it doesn't matter what a coin is going to be paid for when you sell it, because if you're looking to get the best price, that's what you need to shop, is the price. Because you will never know if that person is telling you the truth or not. They can adjust that price in any manner, and you would never know, just like these dealers who say there's no commissions when you go to sell it back. How do you know? When you go to sell it back, you will want to get the best price you can get for that coin. So there's a lot of little things that I hear, and it's disturbing. So if you have any questions, always give us a call at 800-375-4188. I like to hear, if you hear anything like that, I like to hear it, because that way I can address these situations. And it's definitely, you can share your stories, and I can share them with other people so they don't run into the same problem. So.
There was a caller earlier who was talking about the shorts coming due on Monday. Had you heard anything, silver shorts, have you heard anything at all about that?
No, option expirations, I know for gold was this week, so... I assumed it was for, you know, silver too, but maybe not. But
because of course silver has just been literally going through the roof. It's just been an unbelievable climb over the last couple of weeks, at least this last week.
Yeah, it has. But you know what? A lot of these metals took off again. It's in relationship to, you know, what's happening in South Africa with the power, and we have the significant increases in platinum and palladium. Now, that was something from left field, which no one had anticipated, that put those kind of increases on those metals. So I'm not sure if silver and gold is probably going along with that, with the rising prices.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be talking to Melody here next month. But anyway, thank you so very much for being with us this evening, Melody.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you'd like to get the entire tape, why, of course, you can give us a call at 1-888-544-8927. And then, to really understand what's going on today, let me suggest my talk on the financial tsunami. It's a talk we gave maybe a year and a half ago, but it will give you insight into what is really going on, and there's a syllabus that goes with that, and you'll learn what derivatives are in the carry trade and the hedge funds and the implications, of course, of the retirement of the baby boomers, and of course what the world markets and how they're going to impact and what's going on here, and of course what M1 and M2 and M3 and all of the financial increments are that people talk about. Financial tsunami, you can get it with or without the syllabus, but we think this syllabus is important because it will help you better to understand what indeed is going on today. And then, of course, we have two little pamphlets we've written. They're really my newsletters. You can pull them down off our website, or you can certainly get them in a pamphlet form. One is called The History of Money. The other is called Financial Meltdown. And, of course, we put forward a hypothesis as to why Alan Greenspan did everything wrong and is still doing everything wrong. And it may explain, and I'm not saying it does explain, but it may explain why Alan Greenspan went before a group of Arab financial leaders this last week and told them the best thing they could do would be to cut the relationship between their currency, the peg between their currency and the American dollar, if they want to hold off inflation in their countries and avoid the unrest that comes with inflationary spirals. And why would Alan Greenspan say that? Because if the Arab countries were to do that, why, of course, it could very well mean the end of the American dollar as a reserve currency, and literally trillions of dollars flooding back into America, and the demise of our monetary system. Why would Alan Greenspan do that? Well, you'll want to get our little pamphlet on the financial meltdown. I think it's really quite well worth reading. And then we have, of course, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. It's written by our friend, Professor Anthony Sutton, no longer with us, but a wonderful, wonderful book, another book entitled The Fiat Money Inflation in France. Tells what happened in France back in 1789 when they did exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing today, and what happened to France at that time. And then, of course, Professor Sutton does have two other books. One, I believe, is Gold for Investment. The other is Gold for Survival. Anyway, you could request it. You can always call us and get information at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, you can't understand anything going on unless you understand the spiritual forces which are working behind the scenes. Now, if you'd like a free copy of the pamphlet put out by the other side, the other side, of course, is the Lucius Trust, which coordinates most of the organizations which dominate the world today. And Lucius Trust is actually financed by some of the most wealthy and powerful people in the world. And the Lucius Trust put out a little pamphlet called The Spiritual Hierarchy, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of that if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. It's going to be in the pamphlet we're preparing to go with our planned police state talk. We have the syllabus, but we're going to be reworking that here in a week or so and getting that together for you. So you'll have all the documentation, but you need to understand the spiritual forces at work and what the people on the other side say about what they are doing. You'll certainly want to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret, and then, of course, when you get the minute talk on the planned police state, we simply read to you from what they say. And who are they? Why, they are the people who worship the other god. And that, of course, is Lucifer. They have their organizations. They have their meetings. Their people are planted, according to them, at every level of government, including financial. Well, our number, 1-800-544-8927. The pamphlet, The Spiritual Hierarchy. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish. And it's interesting how many people have sent me emails thanking me for having Barry on my program. And, of course, we have him on each one of our programs three times a week, in the morning, in the afternoon, the evening programs. And Barry is an investigative reporter. He's an Israeli citizen who had to flee to the United States because of threats on his life, because he was exposing so many of the assassinations and vile actions of the people who control Israel today. But what you must understand is the people who control Israel today interlock with the people who control the United States here and make mockery out of the so-called democratic process. And, of course, they pick both of our presidential candidates, and then we get the opportunity to vote for the candidate of their choice. Well, of course, Barry has some amazing stories. Of course, the carnage, the assassination, ruthless assassination of people in Israel. But if you don't think that they kill people here in the United States, you are incredibly naive. I've actually interviewed three different CIA assassins on my program. At least three of the people we've interviewed have been killed, assassinated. And why am I still here? Well, I like to think maybe the Lord has a purpose in keeping me here. At least we're here, and we will be here as long as God gives us breath, and we can bring you to an understanding of what's happening, not only in our country, but in Israel. Because the fate of our country is linked very, very closely with the fate of Israel. And I believe that not from a political point of view, but from a spiritual point of view. And perhaps one reason why God has not brought his judgment on America is because of our support for Israel. We are the only country, the only really friend that Israel has. And, of course, it is simply because of the wicked people who control our government, who are controlling Israel today, and I fear, of course, are planning on the ultimate destruction of that unfortunate nation. So, with that as the background, Barry Shamish, it's good to have you with us again.
It's always a pleasure, but you don't really believe America's Israel's friend.
Well, of course, we pretend to be Israel's friend. No, you're absolutely right. The leaders of the Council on Foreign Relations, of course, are intent, I believe, upon destroying Israel, but that is not the perception that the American people have.
That's true. the American people are actually watching the Clinton-Obama debates like they have a free choice in the election, and these two candidates are who they chose. Apparently, that appears to be a majority opinion. You're right. Both countries have taken the bait, and they're going down together, but Israel is now, it's not an open war, but it's certainly a war is going on already. It's already started in Israel.
And, of course, I think it's only a matter of time before it does become an open war, don't you think?
Well, sure. I mean, this is a statement I don't like to make, but it's a warning that should be heeded. And, well, what difference will it make? You know, I'm just looking at it from the point of view of can Israel win an open war, an open rocket war, and the prognostication for that is really, really bleak. I've done the analysis of the 80,000 missiles aimed at Israel, and it's really not a war they can win. Even if they win somehow, in other words, they still exist after the war, it's as good as losing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Barry.
All right. Today I'm going to turn things around, and I'm going to start with the main issue, which is the murder of Orfa Kasa. And this is an important cultural issue, but it's also extremely political because Orfa Kasa was a Yemenite lady. She was Israel's biggest singing star by far. From about 1985 till her death in 2000, she was a disco queen. And believe it or not, that was not an accident. And we'll get to Shimon Peres, if you can believe this. But you will believe this. He used his influence and power to make her a star. He rewarded Orfa Kasa. But let's give a little background. Orfa Kasa lost a cousin who was kidnapped in the early 1950s, was never heard from again, and she was a very proud Yemenite woman who, in the year 1997, took her wealth and put $1.5 million into a movie. And by the way, in Israel, $1.5 million is really something. Here it's like 3 days production. But there it's a big movie. And she made a movie beginning in 97, was released in 99. It was called Absolute Justice, in which she starred with Arnon Sadok. Again, a name not many of your listeners will know, but he was nominated for an Academy Award, Best Foreign Film Director, Beyond the Walls, it was called, in 1987, I believe. Nonetheless, this was a big-time production for Israel, and this movie was shown once, and then it was buried. This movie, starring Orfa Kasa, which in Israel should have made it a hugely successful movie, is about a Yemenite woman who lost her brother, and she uses a homicide detective to try and see if he's dead or alive. And it turns out the homicide detective is her brother. It's kind of a hokey plot. But nonetheless, she reactivated the movement to get the truth of where did 4,500 Yemenite infants and toddlers disappear to in the early 1950s. Now, again, I know a little more about this than I should. Because of my Rabin book, I was invited by the rabbi, Uzi Meshulam.
Hold that. Right. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Chavez. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Barry is going this evening to tell us the story of the murder of Orfa Kasa. And here was this Yemenite woman, a very attractive woman, and she was a singer, and she was sort of the sweetheart of Israel. She was the person who people looked to. She was very well thought of. But because she was Yemenite, she remembered what had happened to the Yemenite children. Now, it was in the early 1950s that 4,500 Yemenite children were kidnapped in Israel, and they were sent to the United States to be used in nuclear experiments. Of course, you remember at that time, and if you don't remember, you need to go up on the Internet and type in the Platinum Files and find out that they were using children in orphanages and mentally defective children and right here in the United States and feeding them plutonium and other things. And the Plutonium Files is a book we have, and it talks about certainly the American children were experimented on, but they brought in 4,500 Yemenite children, perfectly normal, healthy children, who were brought in to be experimented and killed here in the United States in the early 1950s. Well, certainly Orfa Kasa had learned about that. She knew about it, and she put together a motion picture and this was, of course, produced in Israel to try to rekindle this memory of what had happened and try to bring the people who were responsible for this terrible atrocity before the bar of justice. So, anyway, you pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, no, she thought they were adopted. That's what Israelis think, that they were kidnapped to be adopted. And every adoptive parent paid $5,000. And that was supposed to be enough money. In fact, the figure was a great deal more than $5,000 a baby. It was atomic secrets. And this I found out from Rabbi Meshulam. He wanted me to be the spokesman for his movement.
And what was it? What was his movement?
Well, the movement for Yemenite children.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
He sat in prison and came was lobotomized in 1999. He hasn't moved from his sofa since then. But I went in, I believe it was 1998, and I was the first one who ever publicized in English what Rabbi Meshulam told me. He told me the story of the atomic experiments. Now, no one else had ever said such a thing, and I didn't believe it, by the way. I just wrote that he claimed that the children mostly died in horrible experiments. He says like 500 of them may have been adopted. He said the vast majority died in viciously cruel atomic experiments. And this he told me from prison, okay? I mean we were bugged. Yeah. He put on his radio tape full blast, played religious music, and I asked him, I said, why don't you just reunite the biological parents with their children, if you know some of them? And he blasted the music, and he said, because most of, he says, I'm waiting for the parents to die, then I'll say the truth. Most of them aren't alive. And he told me the whole story. In the States, they didn't know about radiation. In the late 1940s, it was a new subject, and they were doing experiments in America, in Georgia and Texas, and using prisoners and retardates, especially blacks. And he says they got caught, and they ran out of guinea pigs. And Shimon Peres, who was Israel's director of the Atomic Energy Commission, traded guinea pigs for atomic secrets. And well, what could you say? I'd never heard this before. And initially, in my book, Save Israel, I wrote, Rabbi Meshulam claims that, and I said, I don't want to put my, I don't want to necessarily be associated with this, but that's what he told me. Now I will be associated with it. I have no problem with it, that the early labor Zionists were doing terrible things to the Sephardic children, mostly. Almost entirely children. Now, Ofer Chaza did not know about the atomic experiments, I believe, and the reason why, and I'll get to that shortly, is that she had a long-term romance with Shimon Peres, and that is approximately the reason she became Israel's only internationally known singer. Now, let's first of all talk about how she supposedly died. Before we get on to this sort of detail, she died supposedly of AIDS in February 2000. Now, look, this was a very unpromiscuous woman. From all reports from her friends, family, manager, and so forth, this was not a woman who played around. Now, what happened is she started making the movie in 1997, and suddenly she had a suitor named Doron Ashkenazi. I'm going to tell you right now, he was a set-up hitman. This is who Peres hired to get rid of Chaza in as subtle a way as he could get away with. And the romance, and I got this, it's in my book, Shabtai's Fee Labor Zionism, the Holocaust, the whole story. But he was more than just persistent. Ofer Chaza wanted nothing to do with him, but he started bribing her family, and in traditional Yemenite circles, the family makes a big difference in the choice of spouse. And one aunt, the family yenta, the family matchmaker, got a $20,000 kitchen installed for her role in pushing Chaza into this marriage. It was not a marriage of love. It was a marriage that she was getting a little old and the biological clock was ticking, and the family wanted to see her married. Now, after she was married, everything turned upside down. He forced her to leave her home, her family. He had her fire her manager of two decades. It's a typical story, by the way, of complete isolation. Suddenly, she had no friends. She had to phone her family in secret. And he had his pause around her. Now, fine and dandy, except not even near 2000, not even 2 years after they were married, less, a year and a half, she's dying of AIDS. Now, what the Israeli public was told was that she didn't go to the hospital and seek treatment because she didn't want to disappoint her fans. And we will get to the really remarkable interview I conducted about that nonsensical story that she wouldn't save her own life because it would disappoint her fans. They were a lot more disappointed when she died of AIDS. Nonetheless, she's dead. And the Israeli public is told that she had an affair with a German bisexual director. They're spreading... They always do this in Israel. Every time they kill someone, they spread the most salacious sexual gossip imaginable in the controlled press. And we've gone over this already, how they've done it with Judge Azar and Eliyahu Ben Elisar. And so this is what they do in Israel. As soon as someone dies suspiciously, there are salacious stories all through the media. Now, here is the serious part where we knew it was a murder. Her husband, Doron Ashkenazi, 14 months after she succumbed to AIDS, was dead of an overdose of crystalline meth. Okay, this is what he died of, an overdose of crystalline meth. And by the way, the woman who injected him also died shortly afterwards, just to give the story a little more spice. Now, I'm going to add just a couple of little suspicious details. One was he died in February of 2001 on the very evening of Passover. At eight in the evening, when every Israeli is at their Passover table having a Seder, a ceremonial dinner, he was at home taking crystalline meth. I mean, it doesn't happen that way. Not a Passover evening. Next, his car was about 7 miles away in South Tel Aviv. Nobody knows how it got there. He was taken to the hospital, and he was dead at 9:30. He was dead. Now, you've got yourself Ofer Kaiser dead of AIDS, her husband dead of crystalline meth overdose, and the woman who injected him dead of God knows what. Yeah. They reported that she died, and I think it was some sort of overdose as well. And this isn't the way it happens in real life.
But, of course, the husband, did he have AIDS?
Oh, well, we're going to get to that.
All right, fine. The big story
in Israel was that he must have infected her. Now, he denied this, and this is why he got killed. I was going to get to that slightly later, but it's all right. No, he did not have AIDS. But more to the point, after he died, the government promised to run a test, an autopsy, to find out if he had AIDS. And the person who ran the autopsy was the infamous Dr. Yehuda Hiss, who forged Yitzhak Rabin's autopsy, and also he forged... there was a case of two Yemenite, a mother and a daughter, who were reunited, and a professor, an Arab professor at Hebrew University, took a DNA test and proved that they were mother and daughter. It was Hiss who did another mitochondrial, I think it was called. It was a separate AIDS, a separate DNA test where he announced that they were not mother and daughter. I met both of them. Margalit Omasia was the daughter's name, and her mother lived in Los Angeles. They could not have been more alike. They were like twins. They were both robust women, same size, same face, everything.
Hold up, we'll be right back here, Barry.
Right.
All right. Well, Barry, what Barry is talking about, of course, is the fact that here was a mother and daughter, Yemenite, and of course, it's been proved that they were by DNA. But this other doctor, this obviously shill for the government, comes up with a test to prove that they're not. Why? Well, because they can't let the people of Israel understand the terrible fate of so many of these Yemenite children were frankly kidnapped and, of course, taken away from their parents in the early 50s. And most of them were killed here in the United States in these grotesque experiments. And if you doubt that these experiments went on, go up on the Internet and type in the plutonium files. Or Cindy, CBS had done a fascinating analysis of the story of these children, and of course they lied to their parents. They simply killed them with the plutonium, but they never would let the American parents know what had happened to their defective or children living in orphanages. We could never let the American people know this sort of thing went on here. Why, my goodness, it would have been prosecution of these wonderful scientists who were carrying out these macabre experiments. So anyway, they're trying to discredit the idea that this one woman and her daughter actually were related. What? Because this course gets us into this whole story of the Yemenite children who were kidnapped. Go ahead.
Well, Dr. Hiss, the state coroner, is very well known as a criminal in Israel. I mean, very well known, but, you know, he'll never get so much as a parking ticket. He's the one who covered up the Rabin assassination. He wrote the phony autopsy. So anyways, he promised on behalf of the state that he would test Dora and Ashkenazi for AIDS. Never was a word stated. Never did that come out. The test results, nothing. He was buried, and as far as the public knows, there was no AIDS test done on him. In short, he didn't have AIDS, and that's why they killed him. He was getting so ticked off by the incessant rumors that he was the one who infected Ofer Haza with AIDS, and he was going to blow the lid off the whole thing. So they had to shut him up, and they killed him. They killed him on Passover evening. They kidnapped him. His car was in South Tel Aviv. He was found dead in Herzliya. They injected him with crystal meth, took him to the hospital already almost dead, and that was the end of him. Now, this is not a story that happens every day in Israel. You don't have the number one singing star dying of AIDS and her husband dying of a crystal meth overdose, and the woman who gave him the injection of the crystal meth dies a month later. All of this was Ofer Haza's murder. Now, I could die, but I'm going to not bore your leaders. I'm now going to go into the detail. Ofer Haza, in 1985, made a record of Yemenite disco songs. She made them disco songs that became a surprise international hit. Now, we didn't know who was behind it because she was pretty good, but there were other singers who were also pretty good. And you have to get promoted to get big. And the Yemenite singers don't get big. That's not a style anyone cares about. But she got internationally huge. The first hints of who is backing her.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, the thing that Barry is talking about, you know, who it was that made Ofer Haza an international star. And she was a very attractive woman. She was a good singer, but she was Yemenite, and Yemenite Israelis are not really as popular as many others would be. And certainly there were many other people that were equally talented. But she developed not only a very good reputation in Israel, but throughout the entire world, as if there was an invisible force behind her that was pushing her career. And of course the question is then, who or what was this invisible force? And that gets to be the key, of course, as to why she was murdered. And go right ahead with the story, Barry.
Well, just to let you know what circle she was suddenly hanging out with, if you remember, We Are the World, We Are the People, the Band-Aid song to raise money for Africa, with John Lennon singing. Well, she was amongst the singers of Band-Aid. She was suddenly in the international peace movement, which made no sense as well. Who invited her in? And then it starts becoming slowly clearer. If you recall, the Oslo so-called peace accord was signed in November of 1993. She came with Shimon Peres, and she sang at the signing of the Oslo peace accord. Now, let's see, I believe it's the year is 1994 or 5 when the Nobel Prize for Peace is given to Arafat, Rabin, and Peres. By the way, he bribed his way to a prize, and one of the Nobel Prize committee members, his name was Christensen, opened his mouth and said Peres paid $100,000 to the committee. He gave it to someone named Terje Larsen to bribe the committee so he'd get a prize as well.
Sure.
Nonetheless, who is singing at the affair after the giving of the Nobel Peace Prize? It's Orfa Kasa. She came with Shimon Peres. And now we're going to go, and I'm going to tell you a true story. I'm going to reveal the name for the first time. I don't care anymore. I mean, what's going to happen to him? His name is Meir Meshulam. I did in my book reveal his name. He asked me not to, but it's been 7 years since her death. I don't think he's in any major danger. Unless, you know, the Israeli Shabak is listening to the show, I suppose. I suppose I might be getting him in trouble.
I think, Barry, that the intelligence agencies do listen to our program. I can give you that on first-hand information. But I won't tell you how over the air. But yes, the intelligence agencies are watching what we do. But go right ahead.
They are?
Yep, sure they are. I mean, after all, you're on. This is a first-class program here.
The Israeli Shabak listens to
me? No, I'm talking about CIA, but they work with the Shabbat and with the Mossad. But go ahead.
Oh, you say I had a tough cover.
Okay.
I said hello to them.
All right, fine.
Well, in short, I get a phone call from Orfa Kasa's cousin. And by the way, people called me in Israel because no one else covered the incredibly suspicious circumstances surrounding the Kasa murder. And I'm saying murder now. It was murder. Now, I want to add one amazing point. It was 2 years ago, maybe three, when Rami Tzuberi, he is the Kasa family attorney, went on TV with the prescriptions that Orfa Kasa was given by the hospital for her AIDS, and they were poison. They did nothing to help AIDS. And he accused the hospital of poisoning her outright. He said she did not die of AIDS. She was poisoned. She didn't have AIDS, he said. And this was on national TV, and boy, I was very redeemed by that report. Even the incredibly superficial and stupid Jerusalem Post mentioned that I had been saying the same thing for a while, that she didn't die of AIDS, she was poisoned. Nonetheless, I'm now meeting with Mayor, and by the way, he flies all the way into Tel Aviv from Eilat to meet me. So I take it was a very important meeting for him.
And, of course, she is a relative of the family. He's a representative of the family, and they want to go to Barry because they figure that he got the truth out about the murder of Rabin. He got the truth out about the murders of other people. And so Orfa Kasa's family wants to get Barry learn the true story.
Well, I wouldn't say the whole family.
Well, at least part of the family. Some people in the family want you to find out, don't they?
Well, certainly Cousin Mayer did.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment here with this incredible story from Barry Shamus. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris, the one thing about being an investigative reporter is that people come all the time to give you information. Now, sometimes they're giving you false information, but of course, many times the information is true. People know secrets, and yet there's no way to get the information out. Well, of course, if they can convince Barry that the information is accurate, why, he gets the information out. And at least this one relative of Ofakaza wants to get the story out, so he flies from a lot into Tel Aviv to meet with Barry and to tell him about how his relative was murdered. Pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, I was not given a lot of false information. I could spot the phonies a mile off. The genuine people gave me this information. And as for Mayer, I would trust him implicitly. He was a very concerned Israeli. And he says to me, first of all, he says, if she didn't make that movie, she'd still be alive today. So that movie was gonna absolutely blow the cover, blow the lid off the whole story of the Yemenite children. And he said that movie was shown once in Israel. By the way, go on Google, look up Absolute Justice, Ofakaza, and I believe you can buy it underground somewhere. But it was shown once in Israel at the Tel Aviv Cinematheque. And he says, I was there. He said that movie was chopped up. Ofra told us that she had actually named names, including Peres's buddy, Yisrael Kassar, as one of the co-conspirators in the kidnappings. And he said that was all chopped out. And he said the movie itself, by international standards, was not good. But by Israeli standards, it was a bombshell. And he said that was the last time it was ever shown. It was never shown on TV. It never made it to a theater after that. And he said the producer, again, Arnon Tzedok, just buried the movie. And he said that was the end of her in 97 when she put $1.5 million into a movie about the Yemenite children. He said that spelled the end of her life. That's when Ashkenazi came onto the scene and married her, and she was dead 1.5 years later. Now, he says, he told me many things about Ashkenazi and how he despised the family and how he tried to take Chaza's money and all this kind of stuff, which that already you can expect. If the guy's a cad, he's a cad. But murder, I said, well...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Before we go on, I want Barry to give you his website, and I want him to tell you how you can get his books and how you can get the DVDs he has. So go right ahead, Barry, and then we'll get back to this incredible story you're telling.
Well, this story is found in my book, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. And you can get that amongst my other books at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. In the right-hand corner, it says search. Write my name, Chamish. That's how you spell Chamish. And you'll get to all my books, but if you're interested in Ofakaza, that's where this story is found. Actually, there are follow-ups later on in Bye Bye Gaza, but the main story is in Shabtai Tzvi, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. The website is officially the BarryChamishwebsite.com, but if you do www.BarryChamish.com, it'll take you there. I've got a bunch of DVDs. One has got 124 radio shows, including lots of hours. And I have the Vatican's Crusade for Jerusalem, which is a very strong DVD. So you can phone me for those. They're not on Lulu. And my number is 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. Okay, now back we go to Ofakaza.
Okay, but before we do, let me just put a plug in for one of the DVDs, which I think is great, and that is on the UFOs. And of course, you'll see a lot of pictures of the UFOs. You'll see a lot of the film footage of the various American television programs starring Barry Chamish. But it really goes along with his whole story about the return of the Giants. well worthwhile going ahead and getting the information on it. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, I try and separate those issues. I never once mentioned my UFOs in Israel, lest I ruin the Rabin murder. But I did it, and I'm proud of it. And again, you're right. That was an important phase of my career. But just keep in mind, if you don't believe in UFOs or that they were over Israel while all this evil was taking place, you might want to pick up that DVD to clear my name. Now back to the real-life murder of Ofer Kaiser.
Go right ahead.
Now, what we've got right now is Doron Ashkenazi, a man who was forced on Ofer Kaiser. They married. It's a miserable marriage. She gets pregnant, and he forces her to abort her baby, which, by the way, in religious Yemenite circles, is never done. Never. So he's like a rotten husband, but there's no hint that he's the actual hitman until I met Mayer, and he finally says, and so Ashkenazi was hired to get rid of Ofer. And I said, what, he was a killer? He said, yeah, he was hired to get rid of her. Once that movie was made, to keep the lid on the story of the Yemenite children, they would do anything, and they decided that he would take care of her in his inimitable fashion. And I said, well, who was behind it, Mossad, Shabak? He said, nah. He said, Ashkenazi was Perez's boy. He says he was Perez's hitman. And I said, Perez? I said, why would Shimon Perez want to hit Ofer Kaiser of all people? And then he pulls out, he opens his briefcase. 13 days before Ofer Kaiser dies, she's admitted to the hospital feeling weak. Perez phones the hospital to see what her condition is. At her funeral, Perez, in person, comes and delivers the eulogy. I said, well, how do you know her so well? He says, then he pulls up pictures. Here is Perez and the Queen of Sweden and Ofer Kaiser. Here's Margaret Thatcher and Perez dancing with Ofer Kaiser. And he shows me pictures from the Vatican, the Oslo peace signing, the Nobel Prize, that's where the Queen of Sweden was. And I said, that's fantastic. How did Perez know Ofer Kaiser? He said, look, we all knew, the whole family knew, it's our secret. Ofer Kaiser had a long-term affair with Shimon Peres. And I said, you've got to repeat that to me. I said, he's an old man and an evil one at that. He said, these pictures don't lie. Now, if you're a girl from the slums, and a guy takes you dancing with the Queen of Sweden after he wins the Nobel Prize for Peace, then meets you in his hotel room afterwards, what are you going to do, refuse him? He says, my family, a lot of them just said that Perez raped her. And I said, no, he mind-screwed her. He was using techniques to overly impress her with his diplomatic fame and so forth. But he said, my family, lots of people just said that Perez raped Ofer Kaiser. And I was taking this down. Believe me, now it's like second nature. But at the time I heard this, I just, no one had ever heard about this affair. No one. And there it was in black and white. Perez was with Ofer Kaiser for a number of years, guiding her career. Now, what Mayer tells me is, Mayer knows all about Perez and the Yemenite kids. He studied it. He knows it. He knows that Perez was head of the Israeli Atomic Energy Commission when the Yemenites were kidnapped and sent to America for atomic testing. He knows all this. But he says, I don't think Ofra did. But I think there is a real good chance that she made this movie to get even with Perez, consciously or subconsciously, on behalf of the Yemenite people. Now, again, I said, what do you mean by that? He said Peres was in the government that kidnapped the Yemenite children in the early 50s. That Orpah Chazan knew. And she was aware that her candy man, the man who gave her the fame, was a part of that government. He said, at a minimum, she knew that. And he said she felt incredible shame at this affair. This young girl, she started having an affair with him in 1979, he told me. He had seen her in a movie in 1979 and started the affair. And what was he, 35 years her elder? She was 20, about that. And he said she was deeply ashamed of it. He said there were a lot of reasons for her making the movie. But number one, she rediscovered pride in her Yemenite background, and she had made a lot of money being Yemenite, and she wanted to return something to her family and her people, and this movie was how to do it. But this movie, Mayer told me, would have ultimately exposed Peres and the horrible crimes that he committed against Orpah Chazan's people. He was having an affair with a woman whose family was kidnapped, whose cousin was taken to America and probably died brutally in atomic experiments, and she was making a movie called Absolute Justice. And what Mayer said to me was that's what she was seeking. She was seeking justice for everything that was done to her and her people. And he said, once you do that, and once you attack Peres, and once you threaten to blow the lid off the Yemenite children's story, you don't live long in Israel. And I'm going to end it with that. There's more, but that's essentially why Orpah Chazan was murdered by Shimon Peres and his hitman, Doron Ashkenazi, in Israel. She was going to tell, she did tell, the truth of in a very popular fashion. And what Mayer also told me, she said, you got to compare the two people. Orpah Chazan was more popular than Peres, widely loved in the country, which Peres certainly wasn't, but more to the point, she was far more trusted than Peres. Peres had met his match in popular circles, and the whole business had to be snuffed out, beginning with Orpah Chazan. That's the story of Orpah Chazan.
And it's really an incredible story. And, of course, this was one of her relatives that was telling her this story. And when you first heard it, you didn't believe it, really, did you?
No. Well, again, I met Meshulam beforehand, so I knew about the atomic experiments. And I was meeting really top people in the Yemenite community because Meshulam asked me to be a spokesman. But his movement was so taken over by the Shabak and the Shifras family, and there was no getting in. So I knew the background. I knew the atomic background. The fact that Shimon Peres had an affair with Orpah Chazan was just so fantastic. You tell an Israeli this, they'll actually laugh at you. I mean, she died in the year 2000, so she would have been 48 today, and Peres is 86. It's 37 years difference, but it did happen. Incredible as it may seem, that's the Israel today. It's a really, really nasty place. Now, I'm going to do what I usually start off doing and summarizing the week. I just wanted to get that Chazan story out without being rushed.
All right, fine. In fact, one of our favorite guests had just called in and said she was a fan of Orpah Chazan and appreciates you bringing the story out. So go right ahead.
Thank you, Pam. Any time. Get the book in the name of Orpah Chazan. I mean, tell people this truth. That was very nice of the lady.
And she says that, you know, that the music is still out there and it's available. It's very, very unique, and she recommends that people can they can still buy her records, Orpah Chazan's records are still available. It's a very soulful, inspiring type of music. So,
well, it's sure not played on Israeli radio anymore.
All right. Well,
she had a fall from grace there. But, again, people will always play Ofer Chaza. Enough records are out there in Hebrew and English, and the Yemenites.
Amen. Well, let's go ahead. Let's get your review of what's going on over in the Near East, because I'm very, very fearful that we are on the edge of some sort of a major confrontation. So what's going on from your point of view?
Well, it's pretty major this week. Israel lost, two people dead and dozens now wounded, many just from shock and many actually wounded. Ashkelon took a Grad missile. Sderot lost a factory. Dead hits now on a car. There is a war going on in Israel. It may not be all out, but it's a war. It may not be declared, but Israel is fighting back one by one, which is absolutely ineffective. Remember, Sderot innocents are being killed. And Israel is trying to kill the rocket shooters. So Israeli innocents, 8-year-old kid lost his leg and so forth, a student at Sapir College gets killed. These are not part of the conflict. So the Arabs are shooting innocent civilians, and the Israelis are reacting by killing Hamas militants. They call them militants. They're terrorists. And it's not a fair battle. But Israel had a good week, killed a dozen or so Hamas officers, but it has not done a thing to stop this war. And Israel, there's no choice, very shortly, no matter how stupid Olmert is, and he's not just simply ignorant, he's also very dumb, he is going to have to put a stop to the rockets in Gaza. It has to be done now. Too many people are being wounded. And he may put in the old plan of Israel. Israel had this amazing plan in the 70s where they would capture the Gaza Strip, put a roof over it, air condition it, and call the whole thing the Gaza Plaza. One-stop shopping.
Okay.
You like that plan?
Right. Great.
That's what I figure. Just roof the place and air condition it, and park your car outside and then shop at the Gaza Plaza. Because that's about the only way you're going to stop the rockets. You may as well put a roof on the place. Now, something very, very... while this is going on, remember, Israel is getting smashed. Terrible, the number, how quickly it's expanding. Ashkelon is a big city, and it got hit, I guess yesterday, with a Grad missile, a big Russian missile. And so now it's no longer just Sderot. You've got Israel's, fourth or fifth biggest city is now under rocket attack. They got to put a stop to it.
And remember, of course, those rockets are really Russian rockets that they're getting to the Hamas. But where is, of course, Russia getting their money? Well, of course, she's making a lot of money on the oil and gas. But, of course, that was all produced by American Investments and Export-Import Bank. And, in fact, to this very day, when America is having to borrow almost $2.5 billion a day to pay our bills, we're still funneling money into Russia under one guise or another. And you say, why would we be doing that? Why would we be financing the company that's providing the missiles that are being aimed at Israel today? But go right ahead, Barry.
Well, what you've got in Jerusalem was a shock yesterday. The suburb of Atarot was banned to Israelis. There were signs, the government put signs, blocked all the roads into Atarot, and banned Israelis from entering it, and just said outright, this is Palestinian territory. Now, I want to tell you about Atarot. Atarot, first of all, is where the Jerusalem airport is. And the city airport of Jerusalem was given over to the PLO. And now, even worse, there are 1,200 dudums, that's 400 acres of apartments owned by Jews inside Atzeroth, and I guess they're just stuck being in the Palestinian Authority. Atzeroth yesterday was blocked to Jews. And this, by the way, is a very, very serious a development that Jerusalem is being divided. No matter what the government says publicly, of course they're lying. Yesterday they took their first move in dividing Jerusalem. They cut Atzeroth off from the city, and they cut it off from Israelis.
But of course what people have to understand is that the United States and the Israeli government are financing the Palestinian terrorists. They're financing Fatah, and Fatah is financing Hamas. Why would you do anything that stupid? Unless there is another force out there. Our guest is Barry Sabas, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty. Barry, go right ahead. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I got a memory from Atzeroth. I was at the airport there. I was a young student, and they were hiring extras for a movie starring Michael Caine. Ashanti was the name of the movie. If you ever see the movie Ashanti, you will see Jerusalem Airport in one of the scenes. So I went out there on a bus with other extras, and I saw Michael Caine just sitting in the corner waiting to shoot his scene. He seemed very lonely, and everyone was so afraid of him. You know, he's an actor. You don't talk to the actor for some reason. I don't know. I just went up to him and said, "Hello, Mr. Caine, how are you doing?" And he was a delightful gentleman. And he smiled. He said, "I'm doing very well. It's a nice airport. I'm enjoying it." And I said, "Mr. Caine, a lot of people think that your name was originally Cohen and that you're Jewish. Is there anything to this rumor?" And he says, "No." I says, "I wouldn't mind it, but it's not true. It's Caine, and I'm not Jewish." And that's my memory of Atzeroth. I met Michael Caine there. It's not a profound memory, but it's a real memory, and now it's gone. That memory is gone. It now belongs to the PLO. Jerusalem Airport is in Atzeroth. Atzeroth yesterday was blocked off, and my Lord, what they are doing to the nice memories I once had of Jerusalem, oh well, it now belongs to the Palestinian Authority. And that's the fact of the matter. I lost my little memory.
Well, of course, what's going to happen as far as security at the Tel Aviv airport? I mean, that's got to be under Jewish control.
Oh, no, this is Jerusalem airport.
Oh, this, I see, Jerusalem, okay.
Oh, no, this is not, nobody's handing over Ben-Gurion yet. This is the local airport.
I see, okay.
And which, according to the Shimon Peres Vatican plan, is going to become an international airport where you can land without a passport. That's the Paris-Vatican plan for Atzeroth.
Well, we live in a world gone mad. There are only a few of us who are sane, and most people think we're crazy, but we're just going to have to get the information out. And isn't it amazing? And nobody really asks, why is it that your government is helping the Palestinian terrorists? Our government is financing the Palestinian terrorists who are financing Hamas that is attacking Israel. So many of the things don't make sense unless you understand there are other forces. We're out of time, Barry. Good night. God bless. Talk to you again
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right? Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program with Barry Sabas. And certainly, because he was an investigative reporter and because he was widely respected over in Israel, people came to him with these stories, and he was able to verify them, and that's why his books are so very important and why we enjoy having Barry on our program. But Barry brings out the fact that Israel is being betrayed by its leaders today, and many of them are tied right into the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government, and is a front for a secret society that was formed in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes, and that's all covered in a book written by Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, and that's why that book was suppressed for so many years. And If you want to get the book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, we carry it through Radio Liberty. If you want to verify that the book was suppressed by someone coming in and buying Macmillan Company, the publisher, and then lying to Professor Quigley for years about the fact that they were going to republish the book when they had no intention of it, the last thing they could let do was allow the people of the world to understand that America is controlled by a secret society. And, of course, that secret society became the Council on Foreign Relations. It was a front for the Round Table, which was a front for the Association of Helpers, which was a front for the original occult organization. Now, Professor Quigley didn't understand the occult forces. He actually uncovered the greatest story of all time, and he missed it totally, because he didn't, coming from a secular point of view, he didn't understand the spiritual forces that motivated Cecil Rhodes and Lord Alfred Milner, and Lord Brett, and, of course, William Stead, who was deeply involved with theosophy and spiritualism. And we have, of course, Stead's diary, other information, where Stead talks about the formation of the secret society. And the only reason he wrote about it was because he was thrown out of the secret society. And so he felt no compunction writing about it, although he still believed in their dream of a new world order. And, of course, the changing of the world religions. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we do hope that if you're interested in getting Professor Quigley's book, or my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or my talks on certainly the Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Forbidden Secret, or the Planned Police State, that's our latest DVD, the Planned Police State, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. From within, the traitors are controlling our government. There are people who have sworn to uphold our Constitution, and, of course, are really intent upon its destruction and the destruction of our nation, and merging us into a one-world government, which they will control. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on today really does make sense, but unless you understand the spiritual forces that energize these people, why, of course, you're not going to be able to understand why from generation to generation these people are pursuing this goal. Because, after all, many of them, starting back at the time of Cecil Rhodes, knew they would never live to see this come about. But you see, this is a spiritual force. And just as a Catholic priest or Protestant minister may give the whole of their life, certainly working in a missionary field or working in a small church or parish, because they believe they're part of something much larger, and they're energized by their belief in Christianity. So the globalists give the whole of their lives, of course, because they are energized by truly demonic forces. And there really are demonic forces in the world today. If you haven't, of course, seen some of our books, some of our four-tape sets on the four-tape set of the supernatural, four tapes or four CD set, the book that goes with that, entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil, by Johanna Michelson, the book entitled Hostage to the Devil, written by Malachi Martin, and, of course, the four-tape or four-CD set on Malachi Martin, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there are powerful forces in the world that nobody will talk to you about. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will introduce you to them, and then the other material we have will make it vividly clear that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.